Hey everyone, this is Rachel Mooney.
This is Cindy.
This is Maggie.
And this is Andrea. And you're listening to Real Her Talk, houses, heels, and real estate deals.
Okay, so I wanted to deep dive more into our history.
Okay.
Because we briefly glossed over it. But I wanted to say, like, yeah, we all have a lot of experience. But why did we make different changes and what happened exterior or interior, like exterior, like did the market change, whatever? Did you have ahas and you wanted to make changes? Like, because there are so many things that have happened in our careers. And people, like I said, people don't understand what we do. So this is kind of like that peek behind the curtain. And why do we do different things? Why do we make moves or change how our business is set up or all kinds of stuff? So I just thought that would be really interesting today.
Yeah.
Maggie's on vacation, so that's why she's not with us, or doctor, she's somewhere. So I figured today would be a good one because she's kind of told her story a little bit more, just because it's not as long as ours.
We've got long ones.
So I was like, all right, so today's a good day. So Rachel, yeah. Let's start with you.
Like, should I start from the very beginning?
Yes. Because think about it. Like, there's all these people that have entered our industry.
Mm-hmm.
We have a less than 8% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, those of us sitting at this table are the exception, not the rule.
Yes.
And so why do we make different decisions, and how have things impacted us? I mean, I'm sorry if people aren't taking notes right now. They're missing out because... Yeah. Longevity in this industry is so rare.
Yes, it is. It is.
So yeah, start
at the beginning. We've all been in it for so long. So I'm not going to name names of like brokerages or anything like that. But I mean, if I go back to the very beginning, not knowing anything about the industry, I went to a company that's pretty well known around Metro Atlanta, and I worked in their new homes division. So I did all new homes, and it was in Rockdale County. In Covington. So our average sales price was $129,000. We were excited, you know, if we got $136,000 ranch under contract. But I did new construction for the first 4 years.
What was the appeal?
I didn't know any different. So, right, I was 23 years old. I was living at home, no kids, not married, never bought a house. So I just knew I wanted to stay busy. And so the new home division came up. Great opportunity. I was sitting in a neighborhood with another agent, and I became friends with a developer, actually another developer that was not in that new homes community. He and his daughter and I went to school together, and I ended up representing him in two other communities. And so I had several communities that I represented, but it was really just because I didn't know anything. You know, I did that. Then I did some resale. So if somebody would come in and want to buy a new construction, then I would help them on the sale of their house. And then get a two-way deal. But I did that for 4.5 years until Shane and I got married. And when he and I got married, he moved me to Flowery Branch. And again, I was still back at selling in Rockdale, Newton County. So I was driving back and forth.
Yeah, what's the drive time on that in Atlanta?
An hour on a good time. And then I'm going up 85 to 985 during rush hour traffic coming home. And I was pregnant. All great mixes. So it was just miserable. So then at that point, I continued to stay with that office, but I went away from new construction and just did resale. And I did that until he and I moved to Canton in 2005. And when he and I moved to Canton, I actually had a deal with a co-op, David Maxey, mm-hmm. I'll say his name, who is my sponsor. And he and I were working a deal, I think out in Flowery Branch. I don't even recall where it was, but I saw this KW billboard, and he was with KW, and KW had just come to Cherokee County. So I said, David, what is the appeal about?
What is this?
Yeah, yeah. Tell me more about it. He goes, if you have opportunity, just do it. I was like, all right, okay. So I did it. I literally was like, within a matter of a couple of weeks, I'm like, all right, I needed a change because, yeah. You know, I at that point had a child. Another one was on its way, or I had two at that point. And so when I joined KW in 2006, might have been in the end of 2005, somewhere right around that area. That's when I started to, things started connecting of it being a real estate business and not just selling real estate. So my last brokerage did not do any explanation of, it's your own business, you're a 1099 independent contractor, you need to have a P&L, financials. It was more or less you're selling real estate for them on their behalf versus with KW, it was about your business. And so that was a big eye-opening thing for me. And so I did that for several years, learning about KW, starting a team, went into being a team leader.
What does that mean? Most people don't know what that is. I'm sorry, we stink at titles around here.
We really do. Okay, so team leader would be like a managing broker of another company.
Okay.
So, and I did that for the Canton office at the time. Our goals were to grow the office and teach and train and look at profit and all the things. Mm-hmm. So I did that, and at the time I gave my little team to my husband, Shane, who joined us. And he said he didn't want to run a team. He was just going to fire everybody. So he did. And he just sold real estate. Really, more or less, he just wanted to go talk to people and have lunch. That's his thing. He loved to have lunch and go talk to people. And he actually was a great networker. So it worked for him. And so then in 08 started, 07 started happening. And he held on until about 2009, right? Well, it was before 2009. He jumped out of the industry. And then about 2010, I came back into sales. At that point, we just solely focused on short sales and foreclosures. That was the primary business.
What made you go from running an office to going back into sales at that point? I mean, because that's what I mean is like, there's a lot of decision points here. Like
a lot.
I mean, even changing brokerages is not an easy decision. Mm-hmm. Going into running a franchise brokerage, not an easy decision. And then stepping back out isn't.
Right. And at that point, it was to get life back with my kids because my girls were small. They were elementary, not even in elementary yet. I think Olivia was kindergarten and Lola was 4 or 3 years old. So it was really to get that life back because he was being the mom and the dad. Because, as a TL, you're up at the office at 7:30 in the morning. You're up and working at 7:30 at night. We were doing a lot of traveling, going back and forth to Austin monthly for training and education and all the things that we were doing back then. So it was really just to get a time back in my schedule in life. And so I went back to sales and just did short sales and foreclosures. And that was my primary. And I still worked residential as well. But
where did that business come from?
That came from relationships with asset managers.
How'd you make those?
Oh, gosh, that was so long ago.
I'm so glad you said that because I'm sitting here going, you remember so much more. Mine's just one giant big blur.
Gosh, it was building relationships. It was having conversations with people. Banks was a big one.
Were you cold calling?
Yep. I still cold call, but cold calling every single day to build relationships. And so, and then obviously short sales came from word of mouth, mm-hmm. going on listing appointments and then sitting with the seller, letting them know this is what their option was going to be and working them through that process. And so I did a mixture of both of those. Obviously, short sales took a lot of time. It's a lot of energy. Even foreclosures were a lot of time, a lot of energy for very little dollars. Mm-hmm. I mean, I got excited for a $500 check back then. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. It was like I just worked my butt off, but I got a $500 check. In the meantime, you're floating too, utilities and evictions. And
what do you mean by that? Why would you be floating that?
Because that's your responsibility as a listing agent working for a bank. Mm-hmm. So you have to winterize the property and you have to float those utilities and then also cutting grass and anything that HOA requires. You have to float those bills and then you get reimbursements. So,
and you had to turn it all on in your name too, right?
Yep. Yep. And so there was a lot of, there was a lot that went into that. For your $500 check. To mention the offers that were coming in and the negotiations and all the things that were happening at the same time.
Yeah, we were excited when we got our 250 BPAs and mm-hmm. BPOs. Nobody even knows what those are
yeah.
for the most part anymore.
Yeah.
Broker price opinion.
Yeah. We would have to do those. Some of them, those were $50.
Some of those were
$50. But you do those $50 ones because you build those relationships, and that's what brought the additional business. Mm-hmm. So, I don't want to go back to that at any moment. But anyway, but that was a pivot in the business because you had to figure out where those buyers and sellers were, and you had to be that you couldn't just going from new construction. If you were doing new construction, then all those new construction agents just vanished, right? They had to pivot and change their business
or leave.
And so you have to pivot and change your business. And then, so that was 2011, 12 mm-hmm. market started like coming back to normal, 13, 14, 15, 16.
Foreclosure, short sales started going away. So how did you, mm-hmm. what'd you do?
You have to pivot again. So at that point, I went back to KW. I was with KW, went back over to the Dunwoody office and, did not have my team. It was just myself. So I was doing, agent services, helping with agents learn how to do their websites, kind of like one-on-one coaching with them, just helping them understand KW models and systems versus where they were. And at that point, I decided, I think I want to start my team again. And so because I was so far away, because that was Dunwoody, again, getting time back in your calendar, I went to a local brokerage that was a traditional brokerage. And
what does that mean?
That is a traditional broker is, so you have three different models. You have a non-traditional, a traditional, and an interdependent model, which would be what we consider KW. So a traditional brokerage is going to be all the big brokerages that you've seen around for many years. You're working on behalf of that broker for the broker. So you still get education and training, but your splits are not going to be as great. You do not have a cap. Usually you're paying transaction after transaction. Do you want me to name names just for people to understand that?
Yeah.
Okay. So that would be like what was considered Berkshire Hathaway, Coldwell Banker, at the time Prudential, Metro Brokers. Those are traditional brokerages.
Century 21.
Yeah. Trying to think if those are kind of the big ones here.
Yeah.
And probably pretty much anywhere, I would think. So those are traditional brokerages. You're working on behalf of the broker. And then you have a non-traditional, which would be your REMAX, virtual properties, little companies like that, where you get very little training, very little hands-on. Your splits are probably better. You're going to have higher fees, office fees, but you pretty much are just left alone to just run your business. And then you have the interdependent model, which is the mixture of both, which is what KW has done really great with. And I forgot where I was going with that whole story.
Why did you go to the traditional brokerage?
Oh, so I went to the traditional brokerage because he was right next to my house. So again, getting time back. And I did that for 2 years, hired a couple people, had a buyer's agent, and then I had an ISA who now, you know, is Mary Beth. Mm-hmm. Went through the whole cycle with her. So, but she started as an ISA and a transaction coordinator. So at that moment, for 2 years, I realized how much money I had given that broker, which was a lot of money. And I said, okay, we're not going to do this anymore. We are going to go back to KW, and which is why we chose this office, because it was a middle ground between her and Buford and me in coming. So we moved over to KW in 2018, I think, November 2018. Yeah. And that's where we relaunched the team fully again. And so from there, we launched off. We had slow growth and then really fast growth.
Why?
Because of the market. We've talked about this. The market needed, so I wanted to grab as much low-hanging fruit as I could possibly grab. And in doing so, I grew it very quickly, not really paying attention to profit or expenses or putting the right people on the bus. And we did that for a few years. We had great success.
I was going to say, but let's describe the market a little bit then.
Yeah. The market was, you didn't have to know exactly how to sell anything. You didn't know how to, didn't have to understand pricing of property, marketing property for sale, All you had to do was literally be a warm body and you could capture a buyer or a seller. Buyers had major urgency. You had to, as soon as a buyer would say they wanted to see something, you had to react right then or you were going to lose it. And you would lose it at many cases due to multiple offers. So,
and at that time, I mean, we're talking like when you're seeing multiple offers, I mean, we still see multiple offers today. I mean, when we were talking multiple offers, we were seeing 50, 75, 100 offers on one house.
That's right. Right.
We're talking lines out the door to just get in to view it. Like, I mean, we had agents in our office who were breaking up fist fights in front yards of agents getting into literal fist fights, trying to get their clients in the door. So when we're talking about multiple offers, it's not like, oh yeah, I've got two or three, which we should be throwing a party for in any market. But no, we're talking like pandemonium.
Yes. To where we would, most of us as listing agents, we would stop those showings and just stop it because we were getting so inundated with offers and all of them very similar.
Yes.
But when you're looking at 30, 40, 50 offers, all very similar, you just, there's no point.
No.
Just cut it off. You've got a certain amount of time to enter the property, get your offer in, and then we'll be making a decision based off of what our clients want to do from
there. And so you were trying to hire people as fast as you can because you guys were getting inundated.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, and when you're talking about chaos, you're reacting to that and just trying to plug holes because your business is outgrowing, your business is growing at a speed that nobody can keep up with.
That's right. That's right. And it grew very quickly. And it was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting as well. But when you have such fast growth, there's only so many key metrics that you can watch at any given moment. And something's going to fall through the cracks because you just don't have the bandwidth to do so. At the meantime, that you're still trying to chase the next deal, right? Yeah. You don't want anything to fall through. So we did that for a very long period of time. And I started realizing as the market started to level back out again, that I was losing money at a very high rate. And that's where I had to really go in and research my expenses, realign. We had three different expense cuts over a year and a half period of time. And it all started with things that were not necessary for the business. So things that we started at giving away that really wasn't going to affect the business one way or the other. And then the last series of cuts were actual physical bodies of people that we no longer needed. Those were very tough cuts to make because many of us had been together for 5 years. Mm-hmm. So those were tough cuts to have. But again, you're having to pivot and shift with the market. And so many people, and even me looking at my business, I probably should have shifted faster than what I did. I thought that I was shifting fast enough, but always hindsight's 2020. So looking at it, I should have shifted probably 4 to 5 months faster than I did. The last market, when we were doing short sales and foreclosures, I've pivoted very quickly. But that was also because it was a very small machine. It was just, you know, myself and my husband. So it was much easier to pivot. So now you, obviously I needed to pivot quicker, but I lost a lot of money carrying a machine or a business that wasn't producing like it should have because the market was shifting so quickly. And so now if you fast forward to today's market, we are very much leveling off. I was talking to an agent this morning and it feels very much like 2017 and 2016. Like it's really slowing down. One market that I looked at yesterday, the North Forsyth market, we're close to 8 months supply in this 500 to 600 price point.
Yeah. And you and I psychotically track the market. Mm-hmm. So when's the last time you saw it that high?
Oh God, it's been years. I mean, it probably has been 2019, 18 probably. I bet if I go back and look at my Friday morning coffee videos, because I started those in 2017 tracking that, I could probably pinpoint exactly when that was.
Yeah.
It's eerie out there as far as we haven't seen that, but seeing the pace that it's increased so rapidly. And we know that, right? Every market, when you look at Metro Atlanta market, we swing so fast. And I don't know about other markets because I've never been in another market, but Metro Atlanta does. That swing is very rapid. And so we're seeing that in certain parts of it being a rapid swing.
Yeah. And it's like, you talk to people because we both coach and you've been in the industry for so long. And you're like, and it's hard with buyers and sellers because they're listening to the news, which is always behind, right? Mm-hmm. They're always using antiquated data. There's no way for them not to. And it's like, when we were talking that this is a price-worn beauty contest, yeah, 8 months supply of inventory, that's a price-worn a beauty contest. You better freaking listen and have somebody who it knows what it looks like in a skills-based market and how to help you align correctly, or else you might as well just, it's not worth it to even put your house on the market.
That's right.
And they're like, but we want to test it. There's nothing to test. Either you're under contract in 3 to 5 days or you're overpriced, period.
Yep. And we're seeing that quite a bit. So anyway, well, all that said, it's, I think it's a pivoting. It's a, you've got to, in order to sustain in this industry, you have to be seeing what's coming up in the future and you have to be willing to move very rapidly. And I think that's what I did. And that's probably what you did and probably you as well over the series of us going through this industry for so many years.
Because there's cycles.
There's cycles. Yes, 100% cycles. And we're in that cycle. We've got another year and a half or so. We don't really know how much longer, but I would say at least.
Yeah, until interest rates start moving.
Yes.
All right, Cindy, you're up.
Interest rates.
Yeah.
You know, we live and breathe
interest
rates. And so it's so funny going, I started in 1991 in this industry. If you count, basically, I moved from Indiana. We'll start from there. I moved from Indiana in 1990. My husband got a job with NDC on the North Druid Hills. He had been working for him, but there was more opportunities if he came to Atlanta. So we packed up the kids, the two kids, and no dog at that time, and we came to Atlanta. Well, when I think I talked about it before, when you've worked since 1977 to 1990 in Indiana government, and now you're in Atlanta and there's no fancy phones or anything like that. My husband goes to work and I think he told us that he'd be around longer, but basically he said, here you are guys. And he caught the next plane and he's still doing what he was doing because he had an office in New York City that he went to a couple of days a week, and because he did big, big banking transactions. He was the first person that even put ACH and that sort of thing into government. So he worked with a lot of big banks, but as you know, the big banks imploded, just like our industry. There were so many that were obsolete, and they just gobbled each other up. But that's my husband, and that's why we got here. For me, it was starting all over again because I literally was in a place I knew nothing about. Every day I'd put the kids on the bus for the first, let's say for the first 8 months, and I would get my $2 so I could eat at Wendy's for lunch. And I would take a road map, literally take a road map. And we lived in Gwinnett County near Brookwood High School. That's where our kids went to school. And I would just drive somewhere and see if I could figure out where the grocery stores and stuff. Then after I'd gotten that done, I'm going, what am I going to do for a living? Because this isn't me. This isn't me sitting at home.
Twiddling your thumbs.
Waiting for my husband to come home on the weekend. So I started at the CDC Federal Credit Union part-time, and it was in North Druid Hills, and we lived in Lawrenceville, but I drove it for a half a day just because that was a starting place, and it was CDC, and they happened to have a mortgage company. They were doing mortgages. I got started. I ended up as the executive assistant to the president for CDC, and they did mortgages, and they held their mortgages for a year or two before they sold them to Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae. So I ended up in a job which I like, which was helping to decide on all the portfolio, which ones do we sell to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac based on what the interest rate was now. Then, so on that, if we held it and it had a high interest rate, well, let's just sell the lower interest. And that's how I even got interested. I knew taxes, I knew math, but that's how I got interested in it. And then for discussion on another day, I decided I had to make a move. And so one of my friends knew somebody who was hiring processors for this company, Home Bank. And did I want to be a processor? Well, I didn't know what a processor did, but I figured I got a degree and I've got lots of tax experience. Surely I can do processing. And so I went to work for Home Bank worked there. Hold on.
I love it.
How long did I work there? I worked at Home Bank from 1993 to 1997 in processing. And then during that time, my kids were transitioning. And so I took a gap to help my son transition. My daughter wasn't getting into high school. And so, but what I did then is I did marketing for Home Bank for my house. So I still stayed in the industry. And then, I'm going to look at my notes again. So at that time, that was the period when Home Bank collapsed. Mm-hmm. And
so let's talk about that for a second.
Yeah, because that was a big, that collapsing was in my mind like the moment of, oh my gosh, what is happening?
And you said it in the nicest form.
Yeah.
It was like.
Well, okay, so let's put some perspective to this. Home Bank for us, all of us, so obviously I'm born and raised here, you're born and raised here. You were working with Home Bank for a very long time. Home Bank was the largest lender in Metro Atlanta by far, hands down. We all had partnerships with them. Mm-hmm. We all knew everybody there. And all of a sudden, they didn't exist anymore.
Right.
Yeah, we had like 20,000 in commissions that were on the board to come to us.
Yep.
When that happened.
Right.
And it was
right.
A major, like, oh my God. I still remember that day in the office.
But
that was
too.
Like it was a shock.
Oh, it was terrifying.
So many friends at Home. I had already moved on to Wells Fargo at that time. But as a loan officer assistant to a high producing loan officer who had kind of, she had, and I work for women. That's, mm-hmm. I work for women, and she kind of felt like there was something that really needed time. So we moved to Wells Fargo at that time.
So she had inklings. She knew.
Yeah.
Something was off.
Yeah.
And so she jumped ship.
Yes.
Smart lady.
And I, mm-hmm. yes.
And you were smart enough to identify talent and go with her.
Yeah. Well, she's the person that changed my perspective of being a helper and processors. They earn every dime that they make, and they're extremely good. And you know, my processor and I have been together like for 20 years. But she's the one that convinced me that I knew not only how to get it done, I'm a professional chatter. We know that, my mother's gift, that I can make a really good loan officer. And she was an excellent salesperson. She could not make her company work, for lack of a better word, because she didn't see the value in details. Mm-hmm. So we went, and then Wells Fargo, and I think I was there about 6 years, really. And then we decided to move to, it ended up SunTrust. It was Bank Mortgage, and I like to call Bank Mortgage Home Bank Light. It was all the good things with not quite as much ego.
That's a very nice phrasing.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And, but then Bank Mortgage was bought by Bank of Commerce. Still great opportunity. Then Bank of Commerce merged with SunTrust. And that's how I became at SunTrust. And SunTrust, I was a junior LO initially, and then I ended up through I think divine intervention. I ended up as the loan, as a loan officer, and it really happened that I had made friends with a lot of builders, and we were big in home builders. Sandy and I were, so I made friends, and so I stayed, and she moved back to Wells Fargo, and it didn't, that whole system didn't work for her initially, and so I go, okay, this is where I listen to my gut.
Yeah.
No take backs. Right. And I'm going, nothing's changed over there. But they had wooed her. Loan officers get wooed a lot to come and work for me, especially good one.
Yeah.
So anyway, I worked at SunTrust, and they said you can either stay as a junior, you can be a processor, you can be a loan officer. What do you want to do? And I said, okay, I'll be a loan officer. And he goes, great, because you know what it is? It's just doing what you're doing every day anyway, but now you're in charge of your own
business. Yeah.
So, and that's stayed there. And that's when some of the home bank people also came to SunTrust. And that's where the old gang got back together again. And some of the ones that work with Natalie and Lou, and that's how we all got back together. And then in 2012, I got a call from Lou Saris, who's one of the owners of Fairway. And I was sitting at the Prudential office in Suwannee in my car, and SunTrust needed to be profitable, but they seem to need to be profitable. I'm naming names. Profitable. Okay. And taking huge chunks of the loan officers. Instead of taking commission, they reduce your commission, basically. Oh. So I'm sitting, and I loved it. I love the people. A lot of the people you have hired were there. But I was literally sitting in the parking lot looking at my paycheck, and after everything was taken out, there was $25, and I was a really successful in that office. That check said $25 net to me, and I'm going, all right, there's something wrong here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for how much time of work was that? I mean, you were getting paid $25 for a week?
No, that would be two. I forgot if SunTrust was on biweekly or if it was on semi-monthly. But it was a aha moment. Mm-hmm. And I had been there for like 9 years now. And this lovely gentleman who we all know, Lou Saris, called. I think it was divine intervention. He called me. He says, are you ready to make a move? I'm looking at this check. I go, I believe I am.
Uh-huh. I think this is literally, I'm holding the sign.
Yeah, exactly. And I went, and it was a little stressful because it was being built from the ground up. But
you hung in there.
Yeah, and it didn't take too long. I mean, the people I work with at Fairway North Point is, they're amazing. They're really, really talented. And so I've been there since 2012. I was a loan officer, then a branch sales manager, then a branch manager. And the difference is if you have to have your own independent office. So I worked in a lot of different offices around town, and that's it. There was a whole lot of moving. And, you know, as you get older, it just kind of all blurs together. But when you try to really, the way you are more granular, I mean, we went through negative AM. We went through interest-only loans. Everything that built up a lot to the...
Negative AM is what?
That means when you're making payments... Basically, you're making payments every month, but you're getting farther in debt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically.
Yeah. Your mortgage payment doesn't cover your monthly payment, and they just tack it onto the back end.
Yes. It's
all the things that contributed to the.
Yes, exactly
the problem that we had.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, now people wouldn't believe that's like, mm-mm. that was a thing that we were allowed to do. Yeah. Oh, no, it was sold.
And interest-only loans. And people were getting second houses and rental houses and interest only and
first and seconds
and subprime. Mm-hmm. Subprime is when it will, those loans would never be purchased by really regulated entities like Fannie and Freddie, but there was this opportunity. And so people were getting farther and farther in debt. I mean, the mortgage industry was doing amazingly well until it didn't.
Yeah.
Until it just crashed and burned.
No, and what's so crazy about that is you talked about interest only first and seconds. I mean, I actually remember people getting first mortgages, second mortgages, interest only.
Yeah.
And like, so nobody was paying principal on any of it, and they were getting more than 100% financing.
That is correct.
And you're like, I mean, we're looking at these docs and you're like, the buyer's getting a check
at closing
to leave with. Like, they're getting money.
That's how when we did new construction, the Nehemiah loan was so prevalent. Yes. And so they would leave with a check and you knew they couldn't even afford blinds in their house. But yet they just bought. Now, I mean, okay, that was $19.99, so $130,000 house, but that loan product,
right?
You know, I'm sitting there as an agent, and I'm like, okay, this doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem right at all, you know. But
no,
it's just crazy.
No, I bought a house
that were out there,
and I got to take home thousands of dollars. I mean, we'd see $2,000-$3,000 checks being cut at closing.
Yeah,
and they're like, and it's not like that they oversent their down payment. There was no down payment.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Wow.
I remember my aha moment. I struggled and struggled with this couple, and they were coming from out of state and they wanted this house, and the numbers just weren't working. And if anybody's watching, you know, your credit report will tell you at the end, everybody you have gotten an inquiry or made an inquiry to. And so I'm looking and going, Mercedes.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Did you get a new Mercedes? No. No, we didn't. Oh. Okay, sign a letter. And I pulled up at the closing, and there was that brand new Mercedes.
Oh, no.
And you know that car dealership said, don't worry, it won't hit your credit until after you buy the house.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But the inquiry does. Not the...
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Still.
So,
yeah,
so just required. Anybody that's out there.
Don't do anything. Don't do anything.
And it's gotten much more savvy now. Thanks to.
Oh, yeah.
But before it was kind of the pinky swear.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Don't do anything. I actually, on that, before we get into you, I had a closing last month, and this buyer, I told her, I said, don't go buy anything. She goes, oh, my lender said it was okay. I'm like, you're the first person that the lender said it was okay. Don't do it. I don't understand why the lender said
also,
it was okay.
I don't believe you.
Yeah. Please don't. Don't go do anything until we have gone to closing. And
yeah. Don't go look at furniture. Just keep walking. Just don't even window shop because you're going to buy something.
Right. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
But I thought it was so bizarre that the lender was says, oh, no, you're fine. And this was on a weekend. We still weren't closing till like Wednesday or Thursday of the following week. You know, so there was a gap there. But
did you know this lender?
No.
Okay. So I'm telling you right now, that was a very, I'm going to get in so much trouble for saying this. I like to say that was a very new lender.
It had to be. I couldn't believe they said it. I couldn't.
Or maybe an older male lender. Honey, everything's fine.
Fine. It's just fine. Don't worry about it. It
probably was the latter, if I had to guess.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
What's your story?
All right. So, you know, my parents were in commercial. It's actually like, this is not a story. I'm going to start it a little bit farther back than most of the time that I do. because most people don't know this, is that my mom, my birth mom, passed away when I was 13. And no one should have that happen. That, yeah, as a 13-year-old girl, I was an only child. And that just is not an experience anybody should have to go through. Mm. And so when I talk about my mom now, people get weird because if anybody listens to my story, I start calling, I'll be like, oh, I'll interchange mom with Janet. Mm-hmm. And people are like, well, why are you calling your mom by her first name? Well, technically she's my stepmom. So my dad, was in pharmaceuticals, for a million years. And then after my mom died, his company got sold and he had to take a new job, and he was driving, we lived in Duluth. He was driving to Conyers every day. Mm-hmm. And it was awful. But what he was doing for pharmaceuticals, companies for a million years is he would do their, warehouses, like designs, layout. He understood how all of the infrastructure inside needed to lay out, the pallets and the, what's the things that things go on? The, you know, the box things. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have it on my head.
You know, those. Okay, good. Everybody else, good? Okay. So that's a very unique skill set, is laying all of that out in an efficient way. So when my mom passed, dad got that other job because his company sold. And really what happened is that my dad wasn't doing well. He had a daughter. He's single. And I looked at him and I was like, I need to buy bras. And he was like, oh, dear God, here's a credit card. Please never ask me that again. Right. And I'm like, well, this is not going to end well. And so my stepmom, Janet, and she had two boys, and Chris and I, her youngest son and I are only 3 months apart. And so I had known them for a million years. We went to the same schools. Janet had known my mom from years ago. So my dad and her ended up getting married pretty quickly. And it was the best thing that happened because my dad would not have survived, like, hands down. And quite frankly, neither would I. She deserves an award. She moved in and didn't even touch any of my mom's stuff until they built their own house and moved into it. Like, she should get an award for that, because I don't know many women who could do that. So Janet was in real estate. And so by the time my parents got married, I was 15, almost 16. And so she said, well, come on, you can, she was a developer. So she owned her own development company, East Coast Development. She was written up in the Atlanta Business Chronicle many times. Had a corner suite in Tower Place, which is down in Buckhead. And she worked with REITs, and which a REIT is a entity that owns many shopping centers, and then they're publicly traded on Wall Street, and that's how they fund themselves. And so JDN at the time, if you go Google that, they have an interesting history now. But at the time, they were very prevalent in Atlanta. And so she worked with them, and she would go out, put the deals together, do the assemblage, put everything together, the package, and then she would present it to Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot's, and then do all the out parcels. So like you guys would know, like at the Mall of Georgia, the Walmart shopping center, like she did that one. Conyers shopping center. So she developed all over. And the whole thing is how she got in with Walmart. It's very difficult. They don't just say, sure, put us together something and we'll look at it. That is not how it works. But she had worked for a developer for a long time. And Walmart said to her, if you will go open your own company, we're not going to just rubber stamp your stuff, but we'll guarantee you a spot at the table. Because she had the edge by being a female owned and operated company, and they would get significant tax breaks for that. And that is a male dominated, there are to this day, just not women in that industry. And so she said, okay. And so she took a leap of faith, opened her business in her basement, and a gentleman named Curtis Hicks, and there's a reason all this plays in, a gentleman named Curtis Hicks, who he worked with Tucker Federal, which was a local credit union. Mm-hmm. And the gentleman who owned Tucker Federal also owned a company called Eagle Real Estate Development. Eagle Real Estate Advisors. Yeah. And so it was Al Nash and Curtis Hicks who ran the development company. And basically what Jerry would do, who owned that, he would fund his own deals because he owned the bank. Very logical, right? Mm-hmm. So they Curtis had been trying to get in with Walmart forever, and Walmart wouldn't give him the time of day because he's a guy and they didn't need
more guys.
More guys. Mm-hmm. So he shows up at my mom's house. This is before my parents get married. And he shows up at my mom's house and he goes, knocks on her door, never had met her, and said, I hear that you've got a seat at the table with Walmart. I'll dirt dog for you. And what that is that's who goes out and identifies, okay, if we assemble like these five pieces of property and pull this all together, we can make this work, right? And then they have to do all the studies and everything. But Curtis was the one who would go out and do that for my mom because that was the only way he was getting a seat at the table. And so it worked really well. So Eagle was who had they had a whole floor at Tower Place, and then she got to sublet from them. And so when I was 15, she's like, all right, well, come on, let's go. I'll teach you real estate. And I'm like, cool, let's go. Right. And so she did. She took me, I went down and worked with her, and she had a secretary, and she had basically an operations manager. And then she had this huge corner office, and I was like, this is cool. I could do this. Mm-hmm. And so I started, once I got my license, driver's license, not real estate license, I would drive down to Buckhead from Duluth and worked for her until I think it was about late 98, maybe early 99. And I was going to turn 18, so I went ahead and got into real estate school, because you can go to school before you're 18, but you can't get your license until you're 18. And so I got my license like right after I turned 18. My parents had built a new house because there was, now they went from two separate households to one. Mm-hmm. And so they put their businesses, because she had opened what's PRI Realty. She had East Coast Realty, East Coast Development, and then PRI. And so she was like, well, we'll just move it all into the basement. We don't need to keep hauling down the Buckhead. That doesn't make any sense anymore. And so they did. And of course, like all 18-year-olds, I was like, I don't need to work for you guys. Like, you know, what they're doing seems kind of cool. And so what they did is they developed, so where I work, they developed Rivermore Park, which is a big neighborhood in Gwinnett County. They did White Columns, which is a big neighborhood over Milton, Alpharetta area. And then they did the Phoenix and Buckhead. So I would rotate being an on-site agent for them. And Curtis did it because family friend, like,
right,
you got to take the kid.
Yeah.
And so could you imagine, I mean, you're talking, I'll never forget this one guy. I was showing him $2 million penthouse, like, so he wanted to combine these $2 million penthouses, and I'm 18, blonde hair, bopping around, and he's trying to spend $2 million, and he's like, so you're licensed? I'm like, yeah. Do you want to sign now? Do you want both of these? Like, what are you doing? You like the view? Let's sign. And that was back when you actually had to have 7 copies of the contracts.
Yeah.
And so then it's just, I'm just laughing because in my perspective, I like looking back, I cannot even imagine. Like, because at Rivermore, we did the Street of Dreams, we did the SouthernLiving.com house. And when we went to sell that, I mean, that was like right at a million because they bought the lot next to it. And nothing had sold anywhere near that in Rivermore Park. I mean, nowhere near. Yeah. I mean, it was like four, you can get Peachtree Residential houses, which those aren't even around anymore. I mean, houses are, but the builder. Peachtree Residential, you could get for $250 up in the front section. Yeah. And then the back section, we were like at $600-700. I mean, and so it was like, holy cow. And yeah, like I wasn't the agent on that sale, but I definitely, like, they'd show up to do stuff. Right. And I'm like, hi. Everybody's like, what is happening right now? talk about real estate being who you know.
Yep.
So then I went back with my parents for a short time because I was like, I was tired of floating. Like, because that was
That's a lot of driving.
So I went back with my parents for a minute. Seth and I got married. And, then we had brilliant idea to elope. So that went well. And then 3 months after we eloped, I got pregnant. And so I was like, okay, I got to figure out, I got to make more money. And, you know, I'm 20 years old at this point. I had just turned 20 right when I had Alyssa. And so I went into new construction because that was, you could make that work.
You can make it work. Yeah.
I could make that work. And it wasn't that it was a consistent paycheck, but it was a consistent paycheck because I was still good at what I did. But, where I ended up being at was down in East Atlanta Village, which was what we called at the time a transitioning neighborhood. Right. That was the sexy way of saying that you couldn't afford Virginia Highlands.
Yep.
So you were going to buy an EAV. Mm-hmm. And the builder actually bought the crack house at the front of the, like, that was in the, across the street from the neighborhood. I think there was three. And cleaned out the drug addicts and the sex workers, now is what we call them, cleaned all that out and then turned them into Section 8 rentals, which put in nice family friendly people that you weren't terrified of for the most part. And then we built, they built bungalows and two stores and everything down in East Atlanta. And we were selling from like 400 to 550, 600. And I was there all the way until the crash. And I will never forget getting the news sitting there because I had Alyssa with me. So I would tote her down with me. Mm-hmm. And it just was what it was.
Yeah.
I had a kid. I mean, what are you going to do? She's been with me. She's 21 now, almost 22. She's been showing houses with me and doing on-site stuff for her whole life.
Yeah.
That's what I had to do. And so right up until the crash was pretty much when I did that. But Seth, meanwhile, in that time frame, Seth and I had gotten into a horrific car accident. Mm-hmm. And he's permanently disabled from that. And so I became very quickly the primary breadwinner. And we got a very small settlement for the car accident. So just fun fact is 18-wheelers are only required by law to cover, to carry about $750,000 in insurance. And his initial medical bills for his first round was way over $1 million. It was like 1.8, whatever. And of course, the hospital immediately attaches to that. It is what it is. So I was doing new construction, crash hit, and I turn around and I'm like, I have a baby. I mean, she was a couple years old. I have a disabled husband. And I'm like, okay, now what? So the irony is Seth has had so many surgeries, had like 36 now to date, like today. But at that point we were in like the mid 20s and he was really having some issues with kidney failure and some other stuff. And so he's having a lot of surgery. And I called my parents. This is right before the crash. Called my parents and I said, I'm putting my house up for sale and I'm moving in. And they were like, no, we sold the big house so that there's only two bedrooms in this house. They built it so that none of the kids could come back. And I was like, that's nice. I'm literally putting a house a for sale sign in my front yard today. And we're going to finish the basement into apartment and we're moving in because I physically cannot, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Like I can't carry, because we had a
big thing.
We had a Bowen family home on the backside of Morningview and it wasn't a massive house. It was like a 4, 2.5 with a bonus or a loft or whatever. But between that and the baby and the surgeries and everything, it was like, I can't. So put the house on the market and you want to talk about divine intervention. I heard about Home Bank, put the house on the market, went under contract. The people, so I sold my house for about, we had that house for like 2 years and we built it from the ground up and I put it under contract for about $20,000 more than I paid for it. And we sold it, and while we were under contract, maybe a week before closing, the bottom fell out. Mm. And I'll never forget, because they wanted to back out of the contract because everything was falling. I mean, and you guys remember, it was like a cliff. It wasn't.
Yeah.
It was like, feels funny, and then cliff.
Yeah.
So I'm under contract, and all I keep thinking is like, they got to close. I mean, because appraisal's already done. Everything's done. We're just literally waiting to get to closing table. And so sure enough, they tried to back out because they were like, there's a stain in the carpet. I'm like, oh, please. I will have that cleaned so fast your head will spin. Yep, cleaned. Mm-hmm. Done. Mm-hmm. So sorry. And so we moved into my parents' basement. It wasn't even finished into an apartment. It was like half done. I was like, I don't care. I'm done. But the house, my same floor plan with a full finished basement sold 60 days later for about $45,000 less than I sold my house for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when we talk cliff,
mate, yeah,
it was a cliff.
You are lucky that whoever was funding their loan
closed.
Yeah, closed on it. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think they were putting like 20% down.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty substantial amount, which is why they were trying to get out.
Yeah.
It was terrifying.
Yeah.
And then we had a little bit of money saved up, but not enough. Mm-hmm. None of us had enough.
No, there was not enough.
There wasn't enough.
You couldn't have enough.
No. We actually lived with my sister-in-law.
Did you?
There was 9 month period of time that we lived with her because we sold our big house. As all that was transitioning, we sold our big house and went into, bought off a, not a subprime. We had a guy that, what do you call that?
Hard money?
We had to do a hard money loan
to buy a house. Guy.
Yeah. I'm like, once you got to, I got a guy. I was like, hard money loan.
We had to do a hard money loan to buy this other small house to live in. At the same time, we decided, okay, let's move in with his sister. Let's short sale this one. We had a tenant. We ended up putting tenants in it. The tenants decided they wanted to buy it, so we were going to short sell it to them. As soon as we got the short sale approved, the tenants bailed, went to foreclosure. It was like, but you know, you're like hopping around. So we literally lived with my sister-in-law for about 9 months. Until all that got settled down.
Wow.
And I think one of the houses was in her name, one was in his name. It was, you know, so then we were able to eventually purchase again. But we lost land. We lost one big tract of land and then the house. And I mean, it was like you're jumping around because the industry was such a,
it was a cliff.
Hard cliff fast.
Yeah.
And that, if you talk to anybody that's been in that and has been through that, that is an experience that you do not ever forget.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's one of those that you go, oh gosh, I never want to feel that again. Of the terror of how in the world am I going to make my bills? I mean, Shane was working 3 jobs to just try to make things happen and 7 days a week. I mean, he was just,
yeah. Oh yeah.
Any odds and ends you can get.
I worked 2 jobs. Uh-huh. For a while.
Yeah. No, I remember vividly, I would sit there and I would run all of our bills, and Seth had his disability, which is like $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And then we got SSI for Alyssa, which is basically because she was underage, and Seth kitten, mm-hmm. and that was $300 a month. And I remember saying to him, I was like, I can make enough. Like I can get by with like the short sales I was picking up. I never could pull together the foreclosure side because I didn't have the bandwidth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had gone back. And so what I did is I moved my license back with my parents immediately because there's nowhere else for me. I mean, I could have gone to him, but right. Why would I do that? I just moved it back. And I was like, I was trying to get him through surgeries. Our daughter had autoimmune problems. She was in and out of the hospital. And so like as the literal world is crashing down around me, I'm like dealing with trying to keep my family together.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how my parents were doing it because they were mostly retired at that point, but they had a lot of money in the stock market.
Yeah.
And so they took out a second mortgage, and that's how they kept their bills paid through that time. And we never would have made it if they didn't do that because they stepped in. And I mean, we paid them rent, but
right.
I mean, but I remember saying to Seth, I was like, if you can just figure out a way to make $250 a month, I can make, oh, yeah. I can make this work. Yeah. All I need is $250 extra a month. That's mm-hmm. all I need. I was like, I know you can't get up and walk around and do a lot and like whatever, but if you can just do that. And he was like, okay, so friends of ours owned a landscaping business. And he was like, I'll answer the phone for you guys. Like I'll do whatever. Mm-hmm. And everybody thinks this is so sexy. Is like,
yeah, you just do what you have to. You do whatever you can.
I've heard somebody say this before, is that being an entrepreneur is doing the things that no one else is willing to do.
That's it.
But the payoff is you get to do things that nobody else can do.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they don't see when you're sitting there on a piece of paper, oh my God, extreme couponing comes out on TV. I'm like,
oh yeah,
I can do that.
Yeah.
Sundays, we'd go to the store. I'd get the coupons. I'd make Seth. He would cut them. I would do it. I started stockpile. Mm-hmm. Well, then I ended up with all this food that was free. And so then I started donating it to people in our congregation who needed food and needed help. Mm-hmm. You know, there were so many things that you ended up doing.
Yeah.
It sucked.
Right.
But, yeah. So, I mean, that's how we made it through that with short sales. And then what was the real kick in the gut was when you would have – I had offers on this one house, is great, up in Flowery Branch, and had it under contract pending short sale approval, whatever. We had been under contract for like 5 months. And the bank says, no, we're not going to take that offer. We're going to go ahead and foreclose.
Yep.
And they end up selling it on the courthouse step for still like $50,000 less than the contract I had.
Yep.
And you're like, this is why you people are going out of business. Mm-hmm.
I had several sitting at the closing table that we couldn't get payoffs for because they were already into the other department.
Yep.
And we would just sit there hoping that we would get it and buyers would end up walking off.
Yeah.
Loans were done. Everything was done. I can't. One of our agents on our team, we were sitting in a, I'm sure we're over at this point, but we were sitting at a closing and he was trying to buy a house and the woman walked in. She goes, I'm not selling. What do you mean you're not selling? She goes, I changed my mind. I'm just going to stay there. And we had gone through the whole short sale process, everything. We were ready to, everything was ready to sign. She turned right around and walked out. I looked at him, I go, I'm so sorry. Like,
and there's what it nothing is. You could do.
Nothing you can do. You just did all that work.
And it was work.
And it was work. It was a daily phone conversation every single day with calling.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, how many times would you talk to the bank and they'd be like, oh, no, we never received those documents.
Oh, yeah.
Sent them to you 9,000 times.
Yeah. And then depending on the bank, if it was Bank of America, you had the portal.
Oh, yes.
You had to go
that
through the portal.
That godforsaken portal.
Yeah. And if you missed something, Equator, if you missed something in the portal, then you had to start over. If you missed the timeline or whatever. Like it
there,
was just,
that is legit PTSD right there. I'm like, it started with an E. That stupid portal started with an E.
Yeah. It was a nightmare.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was a nightmare.
No. So
that you pivot. I mean, you just do what you have to do in order to make.
Oh, yeah.
A dollar.
And it's so funny because I've never, I was never so shocked in my entire life. And I'll get back to my story at a later date because it's too long to finish now. But I will never forget the sheer shock when I had another agent come up to me and goes, you don't understand what it's like for the rest of you because you've had a silver spoon in your mouth your whole life. And I'm like, honey, you ain't got a clue.
Yeah.
Maybe I come off that way and good, great. I'm thrilled that it looks like everything's been smooth sailing and easy. Mm-hmm. But if you've been in the industry for as long as we have, there has never been a silver spoon that has stayed in any of our mouths. No. Mm-hmm. There is blood, sweat, and tears and determination to not give up because giving up was losing.
Right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, and all of us had families too. And even if you felt like, I don't think I can do this another day. Well, you got two kids and and I have a lovely husband. And those are the things because for him, when his industry went sideways, then that made my income all the more
important.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing though, is that I've had the opportunity to see this now, and I'm sure y'all have too, is no, that was a choice you made. It's a choice all of us made. Not everybody makes that choice. Mm-hmm. Some people give up.
Yep.
Yeah. I think my genetics, if you grow up on a farm, you're not allowed to give up.
You're not giving up. No.
It's not in there.
Yeah.
No. So grit and determination and keep showing up.
Yep.